I think she's talking about her son. She says that he's always last to finish work, even though he's very verbally smart. And let me tell you, we have quite the community of parents that know exactly what that's like with their own children. If you've seen some of our previous broadcasts, where we talk about the continuum, we make that connection that intelligence doesn't necessarily mean that a student can be successful. Learning challenges have nothing to do with intelligence. So there are underlying skills that could be contributing to her son struggling. And so I would really encourage Helen for you to join our mom squad, ask that question, get some advice from the people in the group. But definitely when you have a situation like that where it just doesn't make sense, you know your child's smart. He's not as successful as you think he should be in school. It's probably an underlying skill deficit. So, I do have a question from a teacher for Rick and Doris. A teacher in a local school district, probably LAUSD, because they just made an announcement yesterday that they're staying remote. So she's saying that their district is staying remote next year, or at least for the first half of the year. Is this idea of coherence something that can be translated remotely via video? If we're not in the same room, if we're not in the presence of somebody with great coherence, can you still, transmit that to your students if you're teaching remotely?
Do you want me to answer that?
Yeah, I mean,
Okay.
yeah, go
Okay,
ahead and I'll chime in if I.
so we know that there is this field around us, this electromagnetic field, and we can measure it to about 8 feet out. But HeartMath Institute has been doing a lot of work in this particular area, and there's a belief that we don't have the instruments yet to really measure this. To sensitive enough to measure the length of the field. And so there are studies that are going on into what we call non-local coherence. And I'm just going to give you my opinion. My opinion is yes, that coherence can be transmitted. In other words, and of course, I don't have an instrument that can measure that, but I would say that if you are on a Zoom call, if you are teaching remotely, that the children that you're working with can really feel your emotions, that they can really have a sense. My guess is that that this can be that it can be very, very helpful.
Can I share an example?
Yes, go ahead.
Just an example I'll give you that I bet every one of us can relate to, and then I'm going to make a suggestion for you. I bet all of us can think of a time where someone that we are close to, a family member, our child, a close friend, you just had a feeling like you knew something was either wrong or we had an experience where Rick was out fishing with a friend of ours and I just all of a sudden just knew like something wasn't right. And yeah, they almost sank actually in the boat out in the middle of a river. But anyway, I knew without any communication from him, and even though we weren't in the same space, right, that I knew that something was wrong. We've all heard stories of parents who that late at night and their teenager's not home and they know that like they just have that feeling. And so that is what we think of as really this non-local sort of transmission of emotional connection, especially with people that we have a strong connection with. I think as teachers, one of the things that I would really encourage you is that if you learn some of these practices, and we're going to demonstrate one today, but there's more than a dozen practices that can be used for certain purposes, that they're even something that you could use with a student at the start of a learning session. If you're a special educator and you're doing one-on-one or one-on-three, or even with a whole class of kids on a screen and Zoom, we have facilitated and been part of many Zoom communities where we're using these practices and really like the heart connection is there. It really creates this
Yes.
connectedness and bondedness. And so I would say at the beginning of a session, I would create a practice of doing just a quick like 2 minute coherence practice that we'll share one with you. Today we don't have time to share more, but I think that would be beneficial to the learning process and help them get in a state prepared where their brain is more right in sync and prepared to learn. So,
and I think the next thing that we're going to talk about is going to be very helpful to you as well, in terms of your own coherence and your own regulation and your own health as this is stressful to do.
I do have one more question from a teacher before we transition, and it kind of also has to do with this collective coherence, but a teacher that is in special education, and I've definitely experienced this when I was a classroom teacher. I started out at the Learning Center one-on-one. You have that great relationship with your student, and then all of a sudden you go into a classroom and now you have 25 all different zones of regulation and coherence and kind of all these different little balls of energy. And so this teacher is saying, my kids seem to feed off each other. Definitely a dynamic we see in the classroom. If one gets upset, the other kids get agitated too, and they feed off of each other's energy. How can a teacher help to avoid that?
Oh, can I answer this?
I want you, but you can, yes.
I'll be really short and you can put something into. So what you're describing is entrainment. And the really cool thing is you can use this to your advantage. And so when we are reacting to it happening, if this one goes off task and then starts escalating or something the other follows, that's an example of entrainment. But if we get proactive and we start working with the kids that maybe have better regulation and working on having these rituals of, right, being coherent as a group, what will happen is the kids that struggle more will start to entrain to the kids that are actually more coherent. And so I wish I had like an hour just to talk about this, but you can, by getting proactive and thinking about, okay, how can I drive the train on this instead of running up as the caboose, right? And trying to get on top of it as it starts to go off the rails. I think that we can use it to our advantage. So hopefully that's the nutshell version.
So I don't really have anything to add to that, except that once you, as Doris said, if you can get some of your kids, if you as the teacher are in a state of coherence and self-regulation, that's going to spread to your kids. Mm-hmm. Those that they are going to be entrained in, as Doris said, they're going to become more regulated. Their regulation then is affecting other kids' regulation. And the first thing you know, you've got a class that is regulated. And just so I've seen this last year, I would go into classrooms and I would talk to the teachers about regulation and I would pull groups together and I would go into a state of coherence before I went into the group. And the teachers were amazed at how calm and regulated their kids were, especially those kids that had serious behavioral issues.
Or trauma histories. Yeah.
Ronke, and I hope I'm saying her name right, Ronke was contributing, and she has some questions specifically about older individuals. So she has an 18-year-old. And she was just asking, could this be a strategy to help her daughter who's 18, who's older? And it sounds like Ronke is also a professor of some sort. She teaches graduate students. Is this a strategy that we can also use with grad students, you know, that are also going through their own degree of stress right now in a learning model?
Yes, there's actually some studies on graduate students. And so it absolutely can be used with graduate students as well.
So yeah. It's kind of any age this is beneficial for. I mean, anybody who tried the demonstration right now, I mean, we all kind of felt an emotional cognitive shift. I noticed something that in me or in you guys, your voice changes, the rate in which we speak because we made some kind of an emotional shift, mental shift. So fascinating. So really you're saying it can be used with any age, not just kids.
Yes. And
then Sharon is asking, she, in regards to teenagers who deal with a lot of regulation issues, just naturally, biologically, they're going through a lot and have difficulty self-regulating. you know, is this something that we should be incorporating in our schools, either a mindfulness program? Yoga could be one approach. It doesn't have to be the exact answer, but some kind of mindfulness training for teenagers that are in grades 8 and above, because they're dealing with so much dysregulation, just biologically and emotionally, just as part of the natural teenage years.
Yeah, we actually, work with schools to set up what we call a proactive regulation room or a proactive wellness room. And it doesn't require setting up an after-school program or anything that really stretches school resources at all. But it really means just taking a more proactive approach and working at, instead of a plan for when kids struggle, this is a plan for them to spend 5 minutes using this piece of like feedback technology that we have, for example, that will help kids work on where they can see, and there are even some games they can use, and then see right where their regulation is and gradually improving their regulation, or it can be done as a whole class. I think the key thing is to become proactive about it, right? That it's a lot less effective if we're doing it in a reactive situation. And so, yeah, but absolutely any age, any setting. And one of the things we love about it is that it's very simple and time efficient.
Mm-hmm. And perfect. It's based on the way that we as humans operate. So it's a fit for anybody. Thank you again to Doris and Rick. I encourage everyone to use that heart lock-in strategy. That was amazing. And the problem solving. And I'll bet every one of you knows somebody who could benefit from this. So please share.